This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shah on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hey, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Wednesday edition of Sharp Money live from Las Vegas at our South Point Sportsbook studio. Ben Wilson with you in for Patrick Maher. Amal Shah is next to me on the desk. Dustin Sweetelson behind the glass. We're trying to stay cool, Amal. So, easier said than done here in the summer heat of Las Vegas. It's toasty in the studio today.
No question about it. And it should be a fun day. We got a ton of day baseball going on, including not necessarily a playoff game since we're in July, but it feels like it in Cincinnati against the Brewers and the Reds there, as the Reds had pulled in the infield in the third inning. So you know it's going to be probably a very low-scoring game.
Yes. American Family Field, to be exact, where they're playing that game in Milwaukee.
They don't pay me money, so I don't need to acknowledge who the sponsor is.
Just call it the keg. Basically what the colloquial term was for those of us who grew up in Wisconsin.
Oh, that's right.
Bottom of the fourth inning. A lot of day baseball going on. That's not the only game with divisional implications. We'll get into all of that, as well as some potential NL MVP talk in about 15 minutes. Guests on the show today, we'll have a lot of college football, talking some Big 12 previews, as well as the state of the Atlanta Falcons with SiriusXM Big 12 radio host and Falcons radio analyst Dave Archer in about an hour, 4 p.m. Eastern. Then we dive into the Pac-12. Jordan Watkins, Pac-12 Network announcer and analyst, and the former NFL head coach Jay Gruden stops by at 5:30 Eastern. Jordan Watkins, I'm all coming up at 5.
NL MVP talk for what, 2024?
It's funny because Dustin has thoughts on that.
Okay.
He is the reason we're talking about it.
He is the president of the Ronald Acuna fan club. He gave it out, and to his full credit, he deserves all the credit for it. I think Acuna is now like $5, $6, something absurd. And now we're going to talk NL MVP. Okay.
I don't believe he is our true MVP, and I'll explain more about that later.
All right.
It's also July 26th. That's part of it.
No, that's okay. Listen, we got a lot of college football to talk. You know, it's always fun.
And NFL training camps are now open. There are a number of storylines going on. By the way, Dustin, you breaking a sweat yet in here? How are we holding up? I'm worried for you, big guy.
I'm worried for me because here's the thing that happened when I moved to Las Vegas. You know, I'm a boxer brief guy, but because of the heat, the boxer briefs by about midday turned to thongs. And I have a feeling it may be coming earlier here because of the air conditioning being broken in this studio.
You know, Amal already has a tough enough job. He covers the fight this week, and he's about to see a very scantily clad men in person, and now you bring up that image, so you know, come on. Didn't have to go there, but that's how we
let's just keep moving forward.
Let us keep moving forward. So what just happened earlier today, as far as some of the NFL news and notes, not that this really impacts things from a betting perspective, Amal, we figured this would happen, but it's at least, if you are a fan of the Carolina Panthers from the betting perspective this year, you have the guarantee now from head coach Frank Reich. Bryce Young is quarterback. He is going to be the day one starter. There were some thoughts that, look, maybe with a veteran and Andy Dalton there, they'd give Young some time to learn the reins, but that is not the case. One day in, he is your starter.
Love it. Look, the Red Rifle last year was fortunate enough, and I would love to know what the backstory is to why Jameis Winston never played in New Orleans last year, and they went with Andy Dalton. Because from a talent standpoint, there's no way I think too many people are selecting Andy Dalton over Jameis Winston. In Carolina, this doesn't come as a surprise. Look, Bryce Young, this is going to be a little bit of a stretch of a statement. If he can stay healthy, and Ben, he doesn't get dinged up too much because of how small he is, this guy has the potential to be a Hall of Fame quarterback. He is that good of a player that size is a factor, and you can't just then say, well, okay, you know, the injuries. But that's a part of it. Like, we've seen it with Tua. Tua is bigger than Bryce Young. The one concern I have is you're not going to have too many guys coming off the corner like Ryan Watts who are missing tackles like he did in the Texas game against Alabama last year. These guys are going to put you into the ground. And can you get up from those consistent hits? We've seen Tua not be able to withstand that. Seen some other quarterbacks along the way. That's the concern I have for Bryce Young. Accuracy, moxie, the ability to sense pressure in the pocket. This guy can do it all.
7.5 win total for Carolina. It's a division viewed to be weaker as a result. 3 of the 4 teams in the division have 3 of the easiest strength of schedules, according to their opposing Vegas win totals. Here's what the head coach, Frank Reich, had to say as the decision made official, and we will know who is starting week 1 in Carolina. It is Bryce Young.
Bryce will fool you now, you know, because he's got this quiet demeanor. But I like the way Scott said it. This is a grown man. This is a stinking grown man. And he's in control. He knows what he wants and how he wants it done. And I think that's a good place to start from.
The thing I always wonder with rookie quarterbacks, so Amal, it's about the offensive line. What sort of protection is he getting? Yeah. This is a Carolina offense that by a lot of advanced metrics was top 10 across the board last year. You could argue, Amal, of any position of any team in the NFL, of all 32 teams, no team overachieved more based on preseason expectation in 2022 than Carolina's offensive line. Big reason why it was the first-round draft pick in Ikem Ekwonu. Now you bring in a head coach, Frank Reich, who had his best success at Indianapolis when the offensive line was absolutely humming and giving whatever quarterback he had ample time to throw the ball. How do you imagine that translates now? And is it fair to say that that O-line performance is repeatable, or you expect a step back?
Hey, I think it's repeatable, especially with when you look at what Bryce Young does. You know, he's so good at sensing the pressure, stepping up in the pocket, keeping his eyes down the field, making a throw when necessary, getting out of the pocket when necessary. I think the confidence this team had as they played well down the stretch last year, and you look at the start early on, you get the Saints on Monday Night Football in week two, so you have two division opponents in the first 2 weeks, at Atlanta, New Orleans at home, and then at Seattle and the Vikings and Lions. So you've got five NFC games. This team can be a force. Look, we've talked about New Orleans being the team to beat in the NFC South. I still believe that because their defense. And I think they've got an improvement in Derek Carr at the quarterback. As good as Bryce Young is going to be, make no mistake about it, Derek Carr is, without question, the best quarterback in that division.
Sure. Totally valid. And Carolina has the win total set basically shaded around the win total from last year. Seven wins. 7.5 right now. Third choice out of the NFC South at 4-1. And that's not the only team where I look at offensive line and view that to be a catalyst toward team success. How about the New York Giants, who talked about them all earlier in the week with the Saquon Barkley contract and holdout ending as they amended now what his one-year deal will hold for 2023. But this also comes out today with Andrew Thomas, the young left tackle, given a record-setting 5-year extension. Now, we're not talking about the Giants O-line the way we talk about the Panthers.
Right.
I mean, this team was a dumpster fire at the O-line position and still won in spite of it. So on the one hand, you could go, all right, well, you're locking up the one piece you really trust at left tackle in that offensive line, protecting quarterback Daniel Jones' blindside. On the other hand, it's a whole lot of capital to devote to a guy who is one piece of a bottom five O-line, I would argue, in the NFL.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you there. And you look at the average annual value given in this contract, $117.5 million, so $23.5 per. Only Laremy Tunsil, Trent Williams are guys right now in that same neighborhood. Actually, this makes Andrew Thomas the second highest paid tackle right now at $23.5 million. Also, David Bakhtiari at $23 million in that neighborhood as well. I'll tell you, if you're Saquon Barkley, and if you're a running back, you're officially done. It's over. You're never getting paid. The fact that they just paid Daniel Jones and Andrew Thomas, and look, Saquon Barkley has been their best offensive player for the last 5 years, you're never getting paid. And to me, if you're a young guy playing running back coming up, you should switch positions. First of all, these teams want to get rid of you after four seasons, in essence. Look at Dalvin Cook. Right, Dalvin Cook's gone after, what, five years, maybe 6 years in Minnesota? I just think it's a really tough position if you're looking to get paid. Don't get me wrong. I think 99.9% of us would take $10 million a year. But in case you're looking to get $20, $25 million, you better go become a wide receiver.
Well, how about the juxtaposition of all this more than anything, where Saquon Barkley, not only is it his own teammate who's a left tackle blocking for him, gets $67 million in guaranteed money, but also on top of that, you have another story out of another NFC team. Cole Kmet for the Bears is a tight end. 4-year extension, $50 million, and almost 33 of that is guaranteed. So if you're Saquon Barkley, you're going, Kmet? Thomas? Or like, what are we doing here? But that's the reality of how we value positions.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And to your point, the running back now, minus special teams with the punter and the kicker, is the lowest paid player from a starting standpoint of any player of the 22. I mean, who else is even going to be, when you go to free agency, if you're a wide receiver, you can make $20 to $25 million, offensive tackle, center and guard are even going to make $15 million. Only the fullback, but does anybody use a fullback anymore?
Where's Henry Hynoski at these days? Where's William Henderson at these days?
Alec Ingold, but
where's Mike Allstott?
Also, as a receiver, there's also a great method if you don't get paid to eventually get paid, and that's go be a receiver for Patrick Mahomes or another elite quarterback on a lesser deal, and then have a monster season, and someone else like Juju Smith-Schuster will pay you more money.
The issue on the contrary to that, Dustin, is if you're Kadarius Toney and you cannot put one foot in front of the other without tweaking your knee, then it becomes a moot point.
Well, he wasn't going there for that. He was going there because he wasn't being used with the Giants, because as much as Dave Gettleman should get credit for Andrew Thomas getting paid and Saquon Barkley, who is an elite running back, and Daniel Jones getting G'd up, he also should take hits for Kadarius Toney being, I believe, his last draft pick on the way out.
Also totally valid. It's just Toney with zero inability to stay healthy, and all that's been the big issue.
I will defend one thing. I saw Kadarius Toney play a ton at Florida. That was a great pick by the Giants. It just didn't work out. Now, guys turned out to be bust, and you sit there and say, how can you make that statement of a guy who didn't pan out? Because you're drafting on what you saw. And I got to tell you, Dustin, when he was at Florida, this guy was an absolute dude.
Oh, no, I like the pick. I love Kadarius Toney's talent, but the issue is staying on the field. And when you look at the draft he was in, I'm trying to find who went after him wide receiver-wise. There were some good guys still on the board, I believe, that looked a little bit more, I'd say, refined than he was. He was an elite athlete coming out of Florida.
Yeah, I am with them, although that when you watch him in person and just and even whether that's person on tape, yeah, like the dude jumps out in a sea where no it is very hard to stand out given the athleticism of your average NFL player. He does. It's just
And Ben, very well put in terms of standing out even in the NFL from an athletic standpoint. That's what made Randy Moss so special, right? There's great athletes everywhere, and you're just better than everybody else from an athletic standpoint. So that's why I think Kadarius Toney was, even though it didn't work out, was a good pick. But, you know, the worst injury guy, we had the Bears graphic up here, and we were talking about Cole Kmet. Remember Kevin, was it Kevin White? Yeah, yes. Kevin White out of West Virginia. I think he was the 7th or the 9th pick. And I think he ended up playing like maybe 12 games in 3 years, if that many. And it was just a ton of injuries, unfortunately. Look, you can't necessarily project injuries, especially if a player's not had an injury history.
Sure. And that's what makes it such an inexact science,
yeah,
as far
exactly.
as drafting goes. I don't bring up the Cole Kmet extension and just more of a comparison with Saquon Barkley. Kmet's been a very useful player for Chicago, fits what they want to do in that offense. It's also a $50 million extension. That's a pretty big price tag to pay, though, for an offense that's not proven anything yet.
I'll tell you right now, if Saquon played in Dallas, though, he would have gotten paid better. And the reason why I say that is, and to the Giants' credit, they run it like a business more so than the Cowboys do. Jerry Jones is very, very loyal to his people. And I'm telling you, if Saquon were there, he would have gotten more money. Maybe not an egregious contract, but he would definitely got more than the one-year deal that the Giants gave him.
A lot more NFL talk for us to get to on today's edition of Sharp Money. When we come back, little baseball talk. Goodwin in the NL Central will update you on next.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Hour number money live from Las Vegas at the South Point Sportsbook Studios. We're back. A lot of college football, NFL to discuss this hour. Also following the latest in Major League Baseball. We'll update you on that in about 15 minutes. A couple of games going down to the wire. Dustin Sweetelson, our producer, found out he's got a sweat of a game he didn't even know he had.
So. Well, no, I'm sweating because the AC's broken.
Well, besides that, the sweats have been, That was established about 2 minutes into the show. But alas, we're going to talk some college football right now. Big 12 also back in with a little Atlanta Falcons talk because our next guest, Dave Archer, a longtime coverer of both, works on the Atlanta Falcons, the radio broadcast network, also SiriusXM Big 12 radio host. Give him a follow at ArcherQB16, joins us right now. And Dave, the question everybody wants to know is, will this be the year that Texas finally does not underachieve and lives up to the preseason hype with a win total of 9.5. It continues to get bet to the over, now -140. You have to lay if you think Texas win 10 games. What is your outlook on this Longhorn team heading into the year?
Well, I think it's a team that's certainly loaded on paper. There's no question about that. When you look at them from a talent standpoint, some of the transfers that have come in, the development of Quinn Ewers, the quarterback, and I think their improvement defensively, some of that personnel, some of that, with coaching, with Pete Kwiatkowski, of course, in a combination with Gary Patterson a year ago, that the improvements Texas made along the – and then the recruitment of the big guys up front, they've fashioned themselves into a team on paper that looks like – and they were the favorite in Big 12 Media Days. All the media picked Texas to be the favorite, and they should be based on what you see on paper. But as it turns out, we don't play the game on paper. So it'll be the continued development of Quinn Ewers. If Quinn can take that next step, which I think he will, he's got a mass of people around him, both that have grown up in the Texas program and those that have been transferred in, that give Texas a pretty good outlook to step forward.
Dave, you can't talk about the Burnt Orange without talking about their rival, which is obviously Oklahoma north of the Red River. Second year there for Brent Venables, Dylan Gabriel back under center. Sooners did lose a lot of talent the last couple of years in terms of transfers and Mims going to the pros. But how do you look at Oklahoma on the offensive side of the ball? And then, of course, defensively is where Venables really made his bones at Clemson and, of course, previously at OU.
Yeah, this will be a little bit more of an interesting OU team in the fact that I think Dylan Gabriel is an outstanding player at the quarterback position. They were a different football team with Dylan on the field. Just didn't have the backup power. Beeble, the guy that transferred in from, Pitt or someplace, he just wasn't very good. And subsequently they lost, 49-0 to their rival, Texas. That's not the case this year. They've got Jackson Arnold, a highly recruited kid that came in, he played extremely well in the spring. I think they're very solidified at the quarterback position, even if they had to hand it to the true freshman. It'll be interesting to see who steps up around Dylan Gabriel when it comes to the offensive side of the football, because we know that, you know, Eric Gray's gone, their 1,000-yard rusher. Marvin Mims has gone to the National Football League, their outstanding wide receiver. So it's going to be up to Farouk and a couple other receivers to step up around. Austin Stogner returns as their tight end. He's very familiar with the program, of course, because he was an Oklahoma Sooner and then spent a little time in South Carolina before coming back to OU. So I think their offensive line will be solid. Coach Beatenbow's outstanding when it comes to offensive line play. But the thing that gets lost about OU is they're a team that you think, okay, slings it all over the yard, and that's not really the case. When they're really good, they can run it. They got back to running the ball again last year after kind of an absentee when it came to the running game in 21. They got back to running the ball. They ran the ball for almost 220 yards a year ago. So that'll be something they'll need to do, even with Dylan Gabriel, a veteran quarterback, getting things done. The real questions for this team is not necessarily on the offensive side of the ball. It's on the defensive side. They've attacked that side. Brent Venables went out and got a lot of guys in free agency, if you will, the transfer portal. There's a number of players that slide in. Desan McCullough is the first guy that comes to mind out of Indiana. Outstanding, looks the part, edge rusher that looks like he could be an outside linebacker / edge rusher. He's just a sophomore, but a big kid. Their interior defensive line, they bolstered that with another transfer in Rondell Bothroyd, who's going to step in. So they've got guys that kind of, Danny Stutzman, one of the better middle linebackers in the league. They're pretty solid in the secondary, but again, this is not a very good defensive unit last year. Much to everybody's surprise, with Venables being the head coach, but I think they're going to improve. How much they're going to improve, I mean, that's just, we have to wait and see what it looks like on the field.
Now we're talking Big 12 football right now with Dave Archer here on SiriusXM Big 12 Radio right now on Sharp Money. And I'm curious your thoughts, Dave, on the four newcomers into the conference, where UCF, BYU, Cincinnati, Houston all now move over first full year of a full Big 12 conference slate. UCF, of those four, the only team with a win total of over 6 and with a sub 40-1 shot at least to win the conference at 35-1. How do you expect that transition goes for head coach Gus Malzahn and the Golden Knights?
Well, I think that it's going to be a good one in the fact that they got John Rhys Plumlee, their quarterback, that returns. And he's got some transfers that have been in the program for a couple of years that are going to be around him. He's outstanding. He's got a really nice wide receiver core. The biggest thing for them is can they keep John Rhys Plumlee healthy? That was a problem a year ago. They had the ability to hand the ball to Isaiah Bowser, who was essentially a running quarterback, and he did some good things down in the red zone for him, but they're different when Plumlee's on the field. So if he can do that, he's a very talented guy, and I think he's going to help them a lot. But they've got some good outside receivers. I think they're better on defense than people think they are. The biggest transition for them will be playing a Power 5 roster or Power 5 schedule. So normally they would play a couple, three teams that were Power 5 teams, and then the rest of it was sprinkled in with their AAC compatriots or some of the smaller teams like these other teams play. But the depth, it becomes a glaring issue when you begin to have to run a gauntlet in a Power 5 conference. So I think that they're the most equipped to make some noise in the Big 12, but it'll be interesting to see if their depth is there to be able to handle battle of attrition that will inevitably take place.
Dave, which are some teams that intrigue you in this league outside of obviously Texas and OU at the top? Ben just asked you about UCF. Whether it's Kansas State, Texas Tech, TCU, Baylor, who do you think could potentially be a team that challenges for the top of the league outside of the big two?
Yeah, I think K-State's ready to go. I mean, Chris Klieman's an outstanding coach. I think that they've got a veteran quarterback in Will Howard that found himself after taking over the job about halfway through the year. After Adrian Martinez was kind of banged up, and Will came in and really played well. They beat TCU in the Big 12 title game, their first Big 12 title in forever. And so they're poised with him coming back. Now they lose Deuce Vaughn. They lose Felix Ondike Azuma, their defensive end. He's an outstanding player. Those guys both went to the National Football League. But I think they've recruited well, and they've got – and Klieman, I'm a big Klieman fan. I think that, you know, he won a number of national championships at the level just below at North Dakota State, and And then here he is in, what, his fourth year, and he guides them to a Big 12 title. So I think that coaching, and there's good coaching throughout this league, but I think that Klieman, to me, is one of those guys that maybe is a next-level guy, seems to communicate and seems to lock in with his players maybe better than some do. Another guy that would be in that same category is Joey McGuire at Texas Tech. I think that this is the year of the Texas Tech, and Zach Kittley's offense should catch fire. If they can get Tyler Shuck on the field, they're a different team. I think they're like 8-2 with Tyler Shuck as a starter. He showed the ability to run the football some last year, which I don't think anybody knew he could do. And they've got a talented young kid behind him in Baron Morton, but it's not really his time yet. If Shuck stays on the field, I think this is a group on offense. They return a ton of guys on the offensive side of the ball. All 11 starters from last year come back. And then the defense is kind of fixing some of the areas. Tyree Wilson off the National Football League after being a first-round draft pick. They'll need to fill that void. He had some 7 or 8 sacks a year ago for him. But I don't think they're necessarily laying in the weeds, guys. I think that I actually picked Texas and K-State to play for the Big 12 championship. So I think that Texas Tech is going to be in the mix as well.
Yeah, K-State trying to get back to that championship game after winning a season ago. In addition to covering the Big 12 for SiriusXM, Dave Archer, you can hear him on the Falcons radio network. Training camp now open. Dave, I'm sure you've been getting that early glimpse of what the Falcons will look like in 2023. You know, where we are out in Vegas, a lot of interest, a lot of respected money on the over from 7.5 to 8. Now it's 8.5, juiced over -120. You buying the Kool-Aid on this Atlanta team heading into the year?
Well, I like the team. I like what Terry Fontenot did in the offseason. They really attacked the defensive side of the football in free agency. There's a number of players that come over that have been successful in this league, or guys that are kind of looking for a new lease on life. A couple of guys, Jeff Okuda and Mike Hughes, two guys who are former number one picks, come in and will play corner spots, potentially nickel corner. You could have A.J. Terrell, Mike Hughes, and Jeff Okuda on the field. All those guys are number one picks, and all they were highly regarded when they came out of college. So I like the makeup of the defense. Now they're going to have to show it on the field. It was not a team that was very good on third down a year ago, and they couldn't get after the passer. So that was what they were trying to attack with some of the free agency signs. On the offensive side of the football, it's just a young team. Drake London had an outstanding last year as a first-round pick out of USC. And Kyle Pitts, who was the year before, who had a really good year, actually went to the Pro Bowl as a rookie tight end. He tore his knee up, and so he's back on the field ready to go. And of course, the addition of Bijan Robinson and some of the versatility he brings, the Texas running back, it looks like there's a lot of weapons. You add Jonnu Smith to that, who's played with Arthur Smith as the offensive coordinator for in Tennessee. All of a sudden, you like a lot of the weapons. You know, Dez Ritter's going to have to take another step. Dez played the last 4 games of the year, the third-round draft pick out of Cincinnati. Big kid, athletic, got a great attitude, played 50 games in college, was 2-2 in his 4 games with the Falcons last year. And he looks solid. I like his makeup. I like his mentality, and I'm expecting Dez to have a really good year. So, I'm the Falcon guy. So I'm
sure,
you know, I like the Falcons down the road. I like the Falcons all the way. So
give him a follow at Archer QB16. Played college football for Iowa State, played 8 years in the NFL, outstanding work as a SiriusXM Big 12 radio analyst and on the Atlanta Falcons radio network. Dave, thanks so much for the time. We really appreciate it.
Good talking to you guys. Y'all take care.
Thank you.
Yeah, great insight there from Dave Archer. As we come back, update you on a little bit of baseball and also go into our 3-point stance on this Wednesday.
This is Sharpening with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back in, everybody, from Las Vegas South Point Sportsbook Studios. I'm Ben Wilson, back with Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson behind the glass. Fun final hour for you, as we'll have Jay Gruden, former NFL head coach, joining us in a half hour. Talk a little MLB, get our plays for the night, Amal. But right now, let's talk some Pac-12 football. Big college football day for us here on the show as we go out to the East Bay. And Jordan Watkins, who joins us right now, network announcer for the Pac-12, as well as he does some writing for the Falcoholic covering the Atlanta Falcons. But guy who played at Stanford, Jordan, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining us as we start off just looking at the odds here with where USC is at. We were talking Big 12 earlier, and we talked about, all right, is this finally the year Texas gets over the hump? In a similar vein, is this finally the year that for Caleb Williams at quarterback, it all comes together and USC gets to the promised land?
Yeah, first and foremost, thanks y'all for having me. And no, it's a great question. I feel like it really could be that year for USC. The main reason is because of everything they did at the line of scrimmage. you think about what they did last year, right? It was flashy, great offense. Caleb Williams winning the Heisman. You had guys like Jordan Addison on the outside. But they really did a good job on offense and defense, emphasizing getting better at that line of scrimmage. So I'm really excited about that. And there's no reason to think defensively they won't continue to take the ball away like they did last year. Mason Cobb also comes in from Oklahoma State, phenomenal Big 12 linebacker. So I think he's going to help too. So I think with those additions and also what they bring back, it really could be that year for the Trojans.
Jordan, Utah won the league last year. They're picked fourth at 6-1 to win the conference this year. I'm a little bit surprised, even though Cam Rising coming off the torn ACL, Whittingham, for my money, is the best coach in the league. How do you see the Utes this year in conference?
Yeah, the way I look at Utah is, I was saying this to someone the other day, whenever you have a program that is always consistent year in and year out, you know what their identity is. You can't rule them out. And for Utah, that's exactly who they are. I know, I believe Dalton Kincaid left last year, was one of those big targets for Utah. But Brant Keithy's going to be back. He's going to be instantly one of the best tight ends you have in the whole conference. And, of course, we all know what defensively the identity for Utah is going to bring. So the big question for them is obviously going to be, can they avoid that one big loss that they usually have at one point of the year, right? They had that loss against UCLA late in the season that kind of derailed things in terms of a CFP push. But that's a big question for them. Otherwise, they're going to be right there again.
Yeah, Ben, 8 starters returning on the Utah defense.
Sure.
This year.
Yeah, 6-1, one of the 4 teams getting a lot of buzz atop that Pac-12 conference. Yeah, Jordan, you're someone who played on the D-line in the trenches for Stanford, and it's something that, at least for my money, and we've talked about this before, where offensive line, defensive line play, among the most underrated when it comes to the betting market, things that just do not get taken into consideration enough. When you examine the scope right now of the conference, what is a front 7 and O-line combo that really stands out to you more than most and more that people are really giving a particular team credit for, if there is one here heading into the season?
So first and foremost, I'm so happy that you gave the line of scrimmage the credit. That
don't worry.
Due.
I got you covered, man.
I appreciate it because it's like you said, you know, everyone wants to look at the fancy names, the quarterbacks, receivers, or maybe safeties, DBs. But I think the one team, and this is why they're a sleeper for a lot of people, is Oregon State. You look at their brand of football, and again, like the same thing I talked about with Utah is the same thing I'll say with Oregon State in terms of the consistency, and you know what the identity is. Oregon State has the identity now of being a very physical, smash-mouth football team. You look at the run game that they had last year, and also the big names they had, I mean, the big guys that they had on the defensive line as well, and who are returning. Also, it looks like they're going to have a pretty good pass attack, whether it's DJU coming in from Clemson, or they had the big-time recruit coming in, a quarterback as well. So they have a quarterback probably that they haven't had in a while, especially in this Jonathan Smith era. So I think that's going to be that team that surprises people. And again, it's because of their physical play, just like how we used to be physical with a lot of teams and kind of, quote-unquote, snuck up on them, you know, about a decade ago.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. I think Jonathan Smith's done a tremendous job staying on this. Jordan, do you think Jonathan Smith, because he played at Oregon State and had get some opportunities elsewhere, will he stay in Corvallis or eventually look to make a move? Because concerns with realignment, Oregon State and Washington State are two programs that could get left out in the cold.
No, that's a tough question. And honestly, when it comes to realignment, I'll just give you the answer I give for any question. Shrug shoulders, yeah, hands sure. up. I don't know, right? Because it's something different by the day, right? But I think it was like what you said. And you look at a lot of other people and a lot of other coaches in this conference. When you have someone who is all about that school or all about the conference, it makes me a little hesitant to say that they'd leave anywhere, right? Just Jonathan Smith at Oregon State. Even if you heard what Chip Kelly said at Media Day about UCLA leaving, it's obvious, like he loves the Pac-12, obviously was at Oregon for a long time before that. You know, my head coach, David Shaw at Stanford, he had all the NFL rumors for years and never wanted to leave. So it really does show and say something about how a lot of these coaches think about this conference, but also their respective schools as well.
Jordan, you brought up a great point. You played for David Shaw at Stanford, and this is an intriguing situation you were in, where if your head coach was leaving, at other programs, players would look to leave. At Stanford, you're going there. Look, if you can make it to the NFL, it's great, but you're coming there for the academic opportunity and what it could bring you the rest of your life. Yeah, how is it different when you look at maybe friends of yours that played elsewhere? If a coach is potentially leaving, you always see a mass exodus, whereas a Stanford or maybe Northwestern or Duke, you won't see that as much.
Yeah, you know, it's so funny you bring that up, because a lot of people were concerned or worried of if that was going to happen at Stanford this past offseason, yeah. Right? You know, David Shaw goes out, Troy Taylor comes in. But I think the thing about it, too, is with the new transfer portal, you know, well, I guess not new, but, you know, it came in after I was done playing. You look at the mass exodus or the changes from year to year, even if you have the same coach. I think that has changed so much to where it doesn't even have, like I said, it doesn't have to be the fact that you have a new head coach, or maybe it's a position coach that you really, really had a good relationship with that moves on somewhere. This the whole dynamic of roster retention and also roster building has changed so much that when I look at it and when I answer the question, it's almost hard to just pin it on just, well, if your head coach leaves, then what? Because, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, you name some really good, really great schools, and there's some others there too where, you know, maybe it's not the overall reputation of the school, but maybe it's a certain department that you're there for or whatnot, what have you. It's still there regardless of your coach is there or not, but because of the relationship and certain philosophies that have changed, you still might look to leave.
Sure. Again, we're talking Pac-12 football right now, leading into the 2023 season. Just had the media days here in Las Vegas with Jordan Watkins. Give him a follow at Big75Fella on Twitter. The thing we always tend to do, Jordan, as bettors, we talk up a lot of teams, get excited about win totals, and then we tend to forget. Yeah, there's only so many wins to go around, especially in a conference where there are a lot of sleeper teams and hype teams this year. So what is a team or two you look at in the Pac-12 and go, now, this might be an underachieving type of season given the strength of the rest of the league?
That's a good question. And I think the way I have to look at it is you have to look at the top of the conference, right? I know we talked about USC and Utah being right there, maybe being a college football playoff finalists. But when you look at that next group, right? And I only want to say next group down, because I think there's about four teams in the Pac-12 that are kind of in that same group. But you look at the Washingtons and you look at Oregon. Look at schedules, because a lot of times, a lot of this comes down to matchups, and not only just the matchups, but when do you play certain teams? And for a lot of the teams that are at the top of the Pac-12, or expect to be at the top of the Pac-12, the question is, can you get the defense figured out, right? We talked about that with USC. We know Utah's going to be there. Now, here's a question. Can Dan Lanning get Oregon to that Georgia reputation, right? Or at least start going to that level, right, where he came from, where he won national championships with Kirby Smart. In Washington also, they have some of that same questions as well. So in this league where it's going to be so talented, it's the best quarterback league from top to bottom in the country, in my opinion, someone's going to knock somebody else off. It's just a matter of how things go. And so I look at one of those two teams that might not finish as well as people expect. But again, it's not because I don't think they're going to be good. It's because I think this conference is really good.
And Amal, it's both teams, 9.5 win totals, but the juice is to the under, and it's going to take a Herculean effort to get to 10 wins.
Yeah, you know, you brought up a good point with Dan Lanning there. The Oregon's got to improve their pass defense. They were horrific last year. They were near the bottom or dead last in college football. Washington, I still have some concerns about them, and Michael Penix. And Jordan, I want to get your thoughts on Penix and this offense. I think they probably arguably the second or third best receiving core in college football. Rome Odunze, he's an absolute dude. They've got some guys there, but can this team defensively, and can the running game also, can Penix perform? When they went to UCLA last year at the Rose Bowl, they were completely outclassed. I mean, look, Penix put up numbers against other teams, but now you're playing elite competition. Can you do the same thing?
Isn't it funny to think about Washington, especially the last decade plus, and have questions about their defense?
Crazy.
And I say that because it's just so funny, because when you look at it, Washington always has been known, all right, the NFL draft's coming up, and there's going to be at least one or two corners or another DB that's picked in the first round from Washington. That's just how it's been, going all the way back even to, you know, Marcus Trufant and his cousin Desmond. You know, Marcus obviously played for my Atlanta Falcons, but It's one of those things. Like I said, obviously they're going to have a really good pass rush. They might have arguably a top three pass rusher coming back in the Pac-12 this year, when that always helps to cover up the pass defense. But I really do think that coming into this year, they're going to improve defensively. And honestly, if they can just have an average, right, an average at best pass rush defense with how dynamic the offense should be this year, I think that'll be good enough for them.
All right, now Washington +320 to win the Pac-12 title game. Oregon 3-1. Then you have USC, your favorites, at +190. Tremendous insights and analysis from Jordan Watkins joining us right now here on Sharp Money. Jordan, we appreciate the time. Check out his work for the Pac-12 Network, as well as the Falcoholic on the writing side for the Atlanta Falcons. Really appreciate it, man. Thanks for stopping by.
No, thanks for having me. Y'all have a good one.
Thank you.
Absolutely. We're really looking forward to the start of the 2023 season. While we will take a break here for a second from the Football Mall, we'll talk a little bit of baseball. It is a Kyle Bradish day. You know how much I love Kyle Bradish. We'll talk about the rest of the MLB slate when we return. See what bets intrigue us next on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Download the DraftKings app today. New customers can bet $5 and get $150 in bonuses instantly. Use promo code VSiN when you sign up. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for full terms and conditions. A half hour left for us here on VSiN Sharp Money. We welcome you back to Las Vegas, South Point Sportsbook Studio. Great to welcome back onto the network the former NFL head coach with Washington in Jay Gruden, who joins us right now talking a little bit of NFL as we get ready for the start of the 2023 season. First off, Coach, great to have you back on the network. The fact that we've had you on for the first time since Daniel Snyder sells the team in Washington, how liberating must that city feel right now from someone like you who spent so many years there?
I think they just got done partying a couple days ago. So I know everybody's excited about a new regime coming in and what the future will bring for the Washington Commanders.
When you look
or
at
whoever they're going to be, I don't know.
right, exactly. Yeah.
Coach, let's stay on that theme for a second there. When you look at this team, I love the talent at wide receiver with Terry McLaurin, Jahan Dotson, and of course, Curtis Samuel as well. Now you've got a young quarterback there in Sam Howell. From your perspective, you've been around good, great quarterbacks. You've been around some quarterbacks, maybe not as good. What do you see and how do you evaluate him fitting in Washington?
Well, I still think their recipe is going to be playing great defense and be able to run the ball. I think Ryan Robinson's got to have a big year. I think Antonio Gibson's got to continue to flourish in the back out of the backfield on third down. And they got to stay balanced. And then Sam Howell's got to be able to utilize his athletic ability with some of the zone reads and the RPOs, try to keep the defense off balance. If they have to become one-dimensional and throw the ball a lot, I think they're going to struggle like most young quarterbacks do. But playing great defense, running the ball, playing a field position game, I think will be their recipe for success.
Yeah, 6.5 on the win total right now for Washington in 2023, juiced under at -120. Speaking of another team, Jay, that was also at a 6.5 win total. It's a team you worked for as a consultant last year, the LA Rams, and head coach Sean McVay was just asked today about that win total. Now the sports betting more in the mainstream, and he said his quote was, "Whatever I say, I'm going to get in trouble right now. They don't believe in us." How much do you believe in the Rams having a bounce back in 2023 after all the injuries that they had to play through a season ago?
Yeah, I've been through that where you have a lot of injuries and you don't win as many games you'd like to with your star players playing. But when you add Matthew Stafford back to the mix healthy and you add Cooper Kupp healthy, they made some changes at receiver. I think the receiving core will be a little bit better. Their offensive line should be a little bit better with, they got Havenstein coming back, and they got Brian Allen coming back, and Note Boom coming back. So those guys will be okay. And they drafted a guard, I think, out of TCU, Avila, so he'll help a little bit. Defensively, where I'm a little bit concerned, losing Jalen Ramsey, I think will hurt. And then I just see how they have to step up. Aaron Donald's obviously a great player, but I just don't know if they have the guys on defense to really get a lot of stops that they need.
Coach, I want to go a little bit off topic here. You mentioned a draft pick out of TCU. When you were a head coach, how much input do you as a head coach or your position coaches have in the involvement of drafting players? Because obviously you're paying attention to what you guys are doing on the field, but then at the same time, you need the pieces that are going to work for you and what you want to do.
Yeah, it's a process. I think it's a great communication issue. Scouts, if you have a GM, he's got to communicate well with the coaches and get everybody's opinion. Then you make your picks based on what the position coach's grade is, the coordinator's grade, the head coach's grade, the scouts who didn't scout, the player's grade, the head scout, the GM, whoever it is. You try to get all the information necessary, the background on the guy, and then you rate them, put them in the draft order that you think they're going to go in, and then make your picks, and hopefully you do enough work where you make good, solid picks and everybody's on the same page. You know, it's when you get in trouble is when somebody comes from outside and they make the picks for you. They didn't even watch a film. That's where you get problems. But for the most part, the process should be good with all organizations. Not everybody's going to agree on every pick. That's a tough thing. But when they do make the pick, you have to understand it's for the team and for the betterment of the franchise, and you got to go with it.
We're talking with the former NFL head coach, Super Bowl champion Jay Gruden right now on VSiN Sharp Money going around the horn on the NFL. Speaking of coaches you have worked with and just thinking about a unique situation when how you played quarterback and now how this will translate into 2023, it's in Green Bay where Matt LaFleur now gets Jordan Love as his quarterback, been in the system a couple seasons, but with moving on from Aaron Rodgers, how do you expect that transition to go with a team that is among the longer shots to come out of the NFC North this year?
Yeah, I think it's deservedly so to be a long shot. I just don't think he's ready to take over the role, my opinion. He's had a couple games where he's played, but this is a situation where they don't have a lot of people around. They didn't have a great receiving crew last year with a Hall of Fame quarterback, and they struggled on offense. Now you take away Aaron Rodgers, you put a young kid in, and you got Dobbs, you got Jaden Reed, who they drafted, you got Christian Watson. I don't think they're really going to scare the heck out of anybody. I think they're going to have to rely on, like I said, with Sam Howell, A.J. Dillon, and Aaron Jones. You know, they got to get them the ball and then utilize Jordan Love's legs and some of the zone reads. I think the same recipe that Washington has to have with Sam Howell, I think Green Bay has to have. Play great defense, play the field position, utilize the athleticism of your quarterback, and obviously get the running backs the ball as often as you can.
Coach, you may be aware that Frank Reich has already named Bryce Young the starting quarterback in Carolina. From a coach's perspective, first of all, tell me why you would make that decision so early in camp. And then if you've had a chance to watch Bryce Young either at Alabama or just overall your thoughts during the scouting process on him.
Well, I think when you have a young quarterback, you want to get him as many reps as possible. When I was at Cincinnati, we had Andy Dalton. We named him the starter right away. So he'd get every rep in OTAs and training camp. In the preseason, which is critical for a young player's development. You got to get them the ball often, get them to play in the huddle, practice breaking the huddle, seeing the defenses, seeing the blitzes, handling protections. So it's a great move, I think, by Frank. You know, they have a veteran behind him, Andy Dalton. I mean, so Andy will be ready if Bryce fails at all. But I think his talent level, his ability to move around, his arm strength, his accuracy, I think warrants him a shot to start week one for the Carolina Panthers.
Sure. Speaking of young quarterbacks, this is a guy who has played last year, not a true rookie, but it seems, Jay, like there are two schools of thought in the San Francisco 49ers. It's either you can't be a legitimate Super Bowl contender with a guy as inexperienced as Brock Purdy as quarterback, or just look at the rest of the roster. That's a group that should be right there no matter who is under center. How do you imagine that from Kyle Shanahan's perspective he's going to approach this year, and what do you expect from the Niners as far as their expectations as one of the short shots out of the NFC?
Yeah, I think they have to make a stand and make themselves a starting quarterback and get it announced. You know, they got Trey Lance and Sam Darnold and Brock Purdy. If you start splitting reps three ways, nobody's going to get enough reps to be as effective as they would be as if you name a starter. So if they name Purdy, great. Continue to utilize Christian McCaffrey, George Kittle, obviously. Run left. Run left as often as you can behind Trent Williams. How we let him get out of Washington, I have no idea. The best tackle I've ever seen or been around. But I am concerned a little bit about the other part of the lineman that they lost in free agency. But they still have great weapons in Ayuk and Debo Samuel and obviously Christian McCaffrey and Kittle. So they'll be a fun team to watch and very competitive to go along with a very excellent defense, assuming Nick Bosa comes into camp.
You mentioned Bosa. Obviously, he's a potential holdout there. But Hargrave comes over from Philadelphia. Quantify the loss for Philadelphia's defensive front and the addition for San Francisco and how beneficial it could potentially be.
Well, I think anytime you get pressure up the middle, it's beneficial to go along with the edge rushers that they have already in house in San Francisco. So they can get you a lot of different ways. They can blitz you. They can rush four. They can rush three and still get home with the talent that they have. So they can play coverage. They can play single high. They got the corners to play man. So defensively, I think it'll be fun for the new defensive coordinator that they have because they have such great players.
Sticking in the NFC, one more team I wanted to throw at you, Jay, since you've worked with Kevin O'Connell, you know very intimately the strengths of Kirk Cousins as a quarterback. A lot of people talking about Minnesota like they're a 5-win team after they had all the one-score wins from a season ago. How do you imagine that the carryover from year one to year two goes for Kevin O'Connell as a head man there in the Twin Cities?
I think the first year, Kevin did a great job. They won a lot of close games. They got the ball bounced their way quite a bit, and I think they gave up more points than they scored despite winning 10 or 11 games. So they're going to have to do a little bit better job on defense. They've made a change on defensive coordinator. They're going to be more aggressive They're going to blitz a lot more, which are going to put their corners in a bind from time to time. And I don't know if, you know, Evans and Murphy and Bynum and all these guys can hold up, and the rookie Blackman can hold up doing that. So I think Minnesota's got to score a lot of points, and Kirk's equipped to do that with the weapons that they have. You know, hopefully the running back without Dalvin Cook, Madison will do okay, but Justin Jefferson will still get his share of touches, and K.J. Osborne will still do good, and that offense, I think, will be pretty explosive.
Coach, one final one for you. The Denver Broncos bring in Sean Payton, tremendous head coach, but Russell Wilson, some question marks surrounding can he still play. From your assessment, how good can he be, and what could this Denver team be this year?
Well, my big concern is they brought in Nate Hackett last year, who coached Aaron Rodgers and has a pretty decent system. I mean, he got another offensive coordinator job with the Jets back with Aaron Rodgers, and they were abysmal on offense. I mean, it's not like the plays were all terrible, I wouldn't think. I mean, some of the plays had to be sound. But just Russell didn't perform very good. And I know some of the coaching decisions with clock management are one thing, but his statistics and his ability to move the ball and throw the ball accurately and on time, I think, is in question. And I know that Sean Payton has a great system. They have very sound offensive plays, but so does Nathaniel Hackett, and they just didn't work. They have a decent receiving core with Cortland Sutton and Jerry Jeudy, obviously, and Tim Patrick, but they got to get the running game going, and Russell's not a spring chicken anymore, so his mobility's not quite what it used to be when he was at Seattle, and I think that's a major concern.
Now, no doubt on that as we get ready for the start of the 2023 season. We can't thank you enough, Jay, for the insights. Jay Gruden, former NFL head coach and Super Bowl champion, joining us right now on Sharp Money. Jay, thank you so much. Appreciate the time as always.
You got it. Thank you guys for having me. Thank
Absolutely. You. I always think back, you know, I remember being a kid and watching arena football. Jay Gruden, arena football legend. By the
Hall
way,
of Famer.
The Hall of Famer coming back next year, the Arena Football League.
Yep.
Announcing a reboot of that league in 2024. When we come back, we'll also go into our best bets, recap everything we've talked about today. Got a long shot list from our producer, Dustin Sweetelson, when we come back to wrap up the show.